This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by the Stand Against Marxism Conference, hosted by the Enemies Within the Church Project. Join us October 18th and 19th in Des Moines, Iowa, for the Stand Against Marxism Conference. Register now. More information is available at standagainstmarxism.com. That's standagainstmarxism.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thank you so much for joining us again. As we look out upon American society today, it's becoming a regular thing to encounter sheer nonsense packaged as perfectly normal and reasonable thinking. Some examples? Well, you can choose from 58 gender options on Facebook or self-identify as the opposite sex and choose your own pronoun. And others think we should open our borders as an act of so-called compassion and give up fossil fuels in order to ostensibly save the world. All of this is beyond the realm of rational thought. But why are we hearing so much nonsense? And whatever happened to common sense, that American tradition of seeing reality as it actually is and declaring truth to be self-evident? We're going to tackle this today with my next guest, Robert Curry. He serves on the board of directors of the Claremont Institute. His latest book is called Reclaiming Common Sense, Finding Truth in a Post-Truth World. Robert, it's wonderful to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. I enjoyed talking to you last time, and I'm looking forward to talking with you today.
Oh, me too. I'm glad that you're tackling this. I must ask this question every single day. Where is the common sense? What has happened to this country? What is your assessment of all of this?
Thank you. So, I loved your introduction, by the way. Those are my favorite examples. Well, what's happening, what we have to understand is that common sense is under an attack. It's under attack. The same people who are trying to destroy and overturn the Constitution, the system of the founders, are determined to overturn the American voter, the American citizen's confidence in their ability to make sense of the world
by
common sense.
Yeah.
So these two projects are happening simultaneously, and they're connected. It's not just an accident that the left is going after the Electoral College and is promoting all these nonsensical things, as you just mentioned, and also, by the way, going after our faith.
Yes.
This is a coordinated attack on the foundation of the country, and it's been cooking for about 100 years in academia and among the sophisticated, but is now out and proud and loud in the country. The thing I'd like to most emphasize is the attack on common sense is part of the same attack as the attack on the Electoral College. If we can overthrow the system, we need to attack the system. We also need to attack the citizens' confidence in their ability to do that job the founders gave us, which is to run the country.
Yeah, we the people. Yeah, I mean, this is what we really are losing, and I think you've really pinpointed it. We're losing our own confidence in our own ability to govern ourselves and increasingly bowing the knee, whether overtly or just by refusing to fight back, to these elites who are pushing this insanity on us. And I guess for a lot of Americans, the question is, why are we buying into this? Our parents and grandparents never would have bought into what a lot of people are buying into today.
That's right. They would never have done it. Yeah, you know, it's just Americans are being put in a terrible position. I mean, imagine you're a teacher or a principal, and the Obama administration puts out an edict that boys who feel they are girls or identify they are girls need to be able to use the girls' facilities.
Crazy.
I mean, it's not only indecent, but it's literally an attack on common sense. So what does that person do? They have to violate their own conscience. They risk losing their job. Or they go along with it and they surrender one piece of their claim on reality.
Yeah.
It's not trivial.
No, it isn't trivial. And every time you say, well, I'll acquiesce on this one thing just to avoid a fight, you lose ground every time you accept any of this nonsense.
Well, that's really what's been happening, isn't it? I mean, we would never have gotten to this point of, you know, being told that two men can be husband and wife if we hadn't been not resisting it. We've stepped back and stepped back and stepped back, and we're right to the edge of the abyss of surrendering our ability to rule ourselves as a free people and by the Constitution and by our common sense.
Which is exactly the point and what everybody needs to understand. So when you go back to the founders, I know when we talked about your previous book, Common Sense Nation, you looked at the ideas of the founders. You say in this book that common sense was the foundation of the American founding. We all think of Thomas Paine's book, Common Sense, one of the most famous, you know, works from that period of time. What about common sense as being really part and parcel of what it means to be an American? How does that all tie together?
Thank you. What a wonderful question. I hope I can do a good job with the answer because that's a beautiful question. See, at the time of the founding, the world had looked like Saudi Arabia or someplace. You had a king, you got a bunch of nobility, you got an official church. They run things. The people are just passive in that situation. That was the way it was under different names around the world. The founders had this wild and crazy idea that we could rule ourselves, and that they designed a system for self-rule. And what they said was that the American citizens' common sense was going to be the basis of our system, not the monarch's will, or not God's will through the monarch, but the common sense of the people. It was a wild and crazy idea, and for a long time, it was just considered to be, everybody, all these countries around the world ruled by kings were waiting for it to fail. But actually, it did pretty darn well.
Yes. Yeah, for a long time. For a long,
long time.
Time. Yeah, and when we talk about these truths we hold to be self-evident, there are no more American words than that.
Yep.
What did they mean by this? I mean, you almost have to go back and re-explain it. It seems almost silly that I would ask the question because I know what it means. But if you were to articulate it to a Generation Z person who is now bought into the 58 gender options, what would you communicate to them about the founders' understanding of truths that are self-evident?
Right. Those young people have been taught there's no such thing as truth. So a self-evident truth, what the heck could that possibly mean?
True.
Well, what the founders meant by a self-evident truth is a truth that doesn't need an argument to support it. If you understand the truth, then if you understand the statement, then you understand it's true simply out of being a person, out of being a human being.
Yeah.
When we see something is wrong, someone is mistreating someone, we don't have to look that up. We don't have to even search out the Ten Commandments to find that out.
Yeah.
We know that if somebody's brutally mistreating somebody else, that's wrong. And we know it that's a self-evidently true thing. And we know it out of our common sense, which, by the way, is the great gift of the Creator. It's our superpower that He gave us that makes us rational beings and moral agents.
That's good. That's good. Well, and you also reference common sense realism. You know, talk a little bit about the ability that we have to exercise common sense and have common sense when we are linked to the reality of what's going on around us as opposed to dreaming it up as we go.
Thank you. What great questions. You're fun to talk to.
Oh, you are too.
It's common sense that gives us access to the reality around us. And that reality, by the way, is sort of fundamentally moral. Sort of the first things we kids notice is, hey, that's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mature, we come into if you actually become a wise person, which I hope to do, if you become a wise person, then you know deeply about what's really going on, what's right and wrong, what's true. And that gift is a capacity that we have to learn from experience and to learn from those who know more and to become someone who understands reality, understands right and wrong, and understands the nature of things. It's common sense is the power that we have, which we're given by the Creator, but which we must develop in the experience of life to be someone who knows what the heck's going on.
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting, and I want to get into this in greater detail when we come back from the next break, but what's very interesting to me is when you have people who are anchored in reality, or at least they appear to be, the lack of confidence that we see around us among these people who can clearly see and experience things and know innately, or you would assume so, what is truth and what is error, and yet seem intimidated or almost brainwashed into not stating it or fighting for it. That's what I want to explore when we come back. Robert Curry with us. His book is Reclaiming Common Sense, Finding Truth in a Post-Truth World. And we'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. There's been a leftist takeover within conservative Christianity. Ungodly socialist ideas are coming to prominence. Ideas like social justice, critical race theory, and cultural Marxism. And leading figures within mainstream evangelicalism are showing themselves to be untrustworthy as shepherds and guardians of the truth. If you're a Christian who wants to know what to do about this serious shift away from biblical truth, then I invite you to join me at the upcoming Stand Against Marxism conference, taking place October 18th and 19th. In Des Moines, Iowa. Hosted by the Enemies Within the Church Project, the Stand Against Marxism conference will inform you about this dangerous infiltration of postmodern thought, connect you with other concerned Christians, and teach you how to defend biblical Christianity in your own church. Register now for the Stand Against Marxism conference, October 18th and 19th in Des Moines, Iowa. For more information, you can visit standagainstmarxism.com. That's standagainstmarxism.com. See you there.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be 3. I don't know where my life would be without her.
The Ministry of Preborn invites you to share your pro-life message through sharing heartbeats. You see, when a young woman considering abortion sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, 8 out of 10 times, she'll choose life for her preborn baby.
That ultrasound changed everything for me. It really did. That made it all worthwhile to know that I was going to have a little blessing. And when she got here, it was just, oh my gosh.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Would you join with Preborn and Janet Mefford today? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds and help save 5 babies' lives. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation goes toward saving babies' lives. Call now, 855-402-2229, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Great to have you along and great to be talking with Robert Curry. He serves on the board of directors of the Claremont Institute and is out with his latest book, Reclaiming Common Sense, Finding Truth in a Post-Truth World. And we were discussing a little bit about the founders and how they knew truth is self-evident. And this is all tied to, you know, the view of the world that the founders have that we are rapidly losing. What do you make, Robert, as I was bringing this up before we went to that last break, what do you make of people who, if you got them probably one-on-one in a room and said, do you really believe there are 58 gender options? And they would say no. What of those people who will then go out into the public square and go along with these elites who are trying to force this lie on all of us and just go along with it? What is the disconnect there and why is that happening?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I mean, what's happening is that common sense is under attack. I mean, if you're a principal, you know, as I just said, the Obama administration was going to make all kinds of trouble for you if you didn't go along with the 63 genders or 31 genders or 100 genders idea.
Right.
And public shaming too.
Yes.
I mean, I live in a community in which there are a lot of people who are excited about these ideas, and you have to be very careful. And my wife has to be very careful, you know, when we say anything, because you can suddenly be pounced on.
Yep.
If you're one person amongst 6 others, you could suddenly have all 6 people turn on you as if you just said something that's blasphemous. If you question those things,
that's true. That's true.
I think your point, your question is brilliant, because what the fact that there's both officialdom, the people in the government and the people in the press, but also your neighbors are so excited about these things, makes it difficult and makes it challenging. But what that means is how far this campaign has succeeded.
Right. Yeah, because compounding that, it's not just that people around you disagree with you and will fight with you, but the fights are becoming more vicious, yeah. more personal. As you yeah. mentioned, public shaming, going yeah. after people on Twitter or Facebook yeah. and trying to destroy them. I mean, that's the kind of, it seems like a lot of people are saying, I just don't want to be destroyed over this. It's not worth it. But don't we lose when we capitulate to the terms that the elites have set upon us to keep us quiet?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the reason for the book. I'm trying to, there's courage, I can't supply that. But I can, I think, in the book, remind people of how much we do, in fact, and must trust our common sense understanding of the world good. And what's right and wrong.
That's good.
And I'm trying to strengthen that. The reason I wrote the book is for individuals, take a look, be strengthened in your knowledge of how it is. And as for the courage part, well, you know, I don't know how to put that in a book.
Yeah, have some. Have some courage. That's my quick off the top of my head reply to that. Have some courage for once. You know, something else that intrigues me is you rightly say in the book, America has always had an elite. And you said that for the past 100 years, and you're right, we have been seeing the erosion of common sense and now it's just getting out of control. But we haven't always had this divide between average Americans and the elites. Why do we have it now? You mentioned that this is an intentional attack that we're seeing from the elites, and we know that. Would you attribute this largely to cultural Marxism, progressivism yes. per se? How would you yes. explain why it's happening?
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, the cultural Marxists, the progressives took over. They took over in academia around 100 years ago, and they become more and more blatant as the time has gone on. So the most interesting thing about American history that Americans don't know is this idea of common sense realism. You know, most people, ordinary Americans, are common sense realists. I mean, you know, they know that a boy in a tutu and a tiara who claims he's a girl is really a boy.
Right.
And, you know, in private conversation, they understand that. Well, our elites, the founders and the generation after that of our leaders, were actually trained in a philosophy called common sense realism.
Hmm.
When you know, Lord Acton is that famous historian, wonderful man, who said, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know that phrase?
Yes.
Right? Well, that's the founder's idea in a single beautiful statement. You know, that's their big idea. Well, when he visited Harvard in the 1850s, and spent some time at the school, he found out that the junior year, every Harvard student studied common sense realism.
Wow.
And that was true, actually, in all of the campuses in America. That James McCosh, who was one of the great common sense realists, was the president of Princeton until 1888. So for a long time after the founding, the founders were trained in a rigorous philosophy of common sense realism, which matches up perfectly with the common sense realism of the ordinary citizen, who understands that, like Lincoln said, if you call a tail a leg, how many legs does a dog have? Four, because you can call it a tail, you can call it a leg, but it's still a tail. You know, that's common sense realism. But the educated elite in America were trained very rigorous philosophy of common sense realism, which matches up perfectly with the ordinary citizens' common sense realism.
So academia makes a difference, as we all know.
Academia has made all the difference. And that's how come we have these elites now who believe that we live in a post-truth era, because they learned it in college.
Yeah, that's right. Well, even going back to Alan Bloom's book about the closing of the American mind and the idea that things can be your truth and not the guy next to you and his truth. That, I mean, the fact, was that really, in your mind, a starting point where we started to lose it? The moral relativism, that something can be true for you and not true for the guy next to you? Not opinions, but objective truth can be something that's, you know, squishy?
It actually had been coming for a long time. So, Alan, you know, a lot of people thought that So that was a late development, not an early development. It's been coming for quite some time, the idea that there's no such thing as truth.
Boy, we're paying for it now. We're paying for
really
it now.
Are.
Yeah.
We really are.
Well, and the flipping, here's the thing that I find very interesting. People thought, for example, with the Obergefell decision, oh, all you're doing is opening up equality, which, you know, that was all Orwellian newspeak anyway.
Yeah.
You know, marriage is between a man and a woman. You can't change it. You can't redefine it. But I remember at the time, a lot of us said, what's going to happen in the long run is you will be reversing morality. You will not be tacking something on. You will see them then trying to reverse morality. Would you say we're there now? That they're really onto that now?
Yes, I think so. I really do. I mean, it's now unacceptable for a person who bakes cakes not to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding.
Right.
I mean, that person who said, well, you know, there were lots of other cake makers in the area. They picked on that guy because he was a Christian.
Yes.
And and that it had nothing to do with the cake. It had to do with getting the regulatory bureaucracy and the government to force people to accept that this was right.
That's right. Yep, exactly. And also throw in a side helping of intimidation to anybody who would want to fight them like Jack Phillips did or like any of these other Christians who have come under fire for in their businesses. And it is really advanced, I've noticed, by a lie, which is they will put out there Jack Phillips wouldn't serve homosexuals, which was never the case. He just said, I'm not going to create a special message with which I disagree. And yet they lie about it. That part and parcel also of what they're pushing on the American people? It's just lie after lie after lie.
I just don't know how to break it to you. But if we really live in a post-truth era, there's no more lies. You know, there's no lying. There's no keeping promises. A person can swear on a Bible, you know, to uphold a constitution and set right to work to subvert it.
Wow.
I mean, if there's no truth, then it's okay for the press to lie about these things and misrepresent, you know, what Phillips was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's no truth, it's just you just get to say whatever the heck you want with the idea of winning.
Right. What is the end game here, do you see, with the elites? Where do they want to take us ultimately?
It's pretty clear, isn't it? I mean, they want to get us to a place where, have you read the book 1984?
Yes, many times. Yes. I don't like rats, though, Robert. I don't want a rat on my face.
Yeah. I mean, you know, 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the, I mean, and we I don't mean to leave our audience out, but I mean, the you know, Winston was forced and tortured into the point where he was willing to admit that the self-evident truth that 2 + 2 = 4 went out the window, 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah.
So what we need to do, if you're going to be an unfree person under a government with their stomping on your face forever, you know, one of the most basic last line of defense is the idea that there are truths and there are self-evident truths. So Winston surrendered when he said, 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah. It's very scary how prescient that book was. I don't like it so much, but and it's there. I mean, if you read 1984, there's so many similarities. What do you make of those Americans? And there's still millions of Americans who do have common sense, who do want to live in a truth world, not in a post-truth world. But what would it take for those people to recapture America and really to rescue it, as it were?
What a great question. Well, I wouldn't be writing these books if I didn't think there was hope for America, because I think there are vast numbers of Americans who've been, like you said, who want those things, but have sort of, for whatever reasons, not taken up the fight. But, you know, America, if I were to criticize America, and I don't want to because I love America, but we, I think, have a tendency to let things go until we have to do something.
True.
Before World War II, it was pretty obvious what was coming. But America had, you know, a little tiny army smaller than Argentina's. You know, we weren't doing anything to prepare until Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea of the American people, and I hope I'm right, is that when push comes to shove, watch out.
Yeah, that's right. Don't wait until it's too late. And I hope it isn't too late. But this is really an essential part of being able to go back to our founders' idea of America and what made America great. And we, the people, have the ability to self-govern. If we still believe that, we need to recapture that. And we need to take away the idea that common sense is passe. It is not. And you got to read the book, Reclaiming Common Sense by Robert Curry. So good to talk to you again, Robert. Great book and so good to talk to you.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Me too. Have a great day. God bless you. And we'll be back on Janet Mefford today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by the Stand Against Marxism Conference, hosted by the Enemies Within the Church Project. Join us October 18th and 19th in Des Moines, Iowa, for the Stand Against Marxism Conference. Register now. More information is available at standagainstmarxism.com. That's standagainstmarxism.com. We're back on Janet Mefford Today. Thanks for being here. I want to talk a little bit about China. I don't know if you saw this, but President Trump had put out a congratulatory tweet to China on its 70th anniversary of Communist Party rule and left a lot of us scratching our heads and saying, all right, I understand you're trying to do, you know, I don't know, your diplomacy with China on the trade issue. I get that. But did you really have to go that far? See, I'm being fair, because I think any president who does something like that deserves to be, you know, wrapped on the wrist a little bit. Don't do that. That's an unforced error. You don't have to praise China in your tweets on the 70th anniversary of their Communist Party, for crying out loud. At any rate, you know, I find it amazing some of the reactions from people across the board to China. There's a lot to talk about. But for example, this was from TR.com. This is the Tommy Robinson news service, which I didn't even know existed until just recently. But there was a reporter, Avi Yemeni, who went to the Hong Kong protests that are taking place in Melbourne, or that took place in Melbourne, Australia, over the weekend, and took the opportunity to speak to some mainland Chinese citizens about their government and asked them the question, is the Chinese Communist government good or evil? Now, keep in mind, these people are Chinese and they have a Communist Party ruling their country. So not everything that comes out of somebody's mouth necessarily is what they truly believe, because this is how commie world works. You have to be careful about what you say if you don't want to have to pay for it later. Nevertheless, you got to listen to these students from mainland China react to the fact that Christians are being thrown in jail in China. Listen to cut one.
Well, I think if they go in jail, there must be some reason.
Well, you don't think that the communist government is a little bit dodgy?
No, because
are you Aussie?
No.
You got an Aussie accent.
Oh, well.
How long you been in Australia?
9 years.
9 years?
Yeah.
You don't believe that the communist government do wrong?
No.
Many people are afraid of the Chinese government. Like me, I'm Chinese, right? I'm a mainland Chinese. If I say something bad about government, my safety is at risk, I have to say.
What would happen? If I didn't cover your face now, what would happen when you went back home?
I might get arrested, or my father or my mother would get like blackmailed, you know, all this. I don't know. Everything's possible.
Do you prefer communism or capitalism?
Communism.
Yeah. Do you live here?
Yeah.
Why?
I both.
Because we're here to learn.
Oh, you're studying?
Yeah, studying.
So you're going to go back after?
Yeah, of course.
So you prefer communism?
Yeah.
You don't think that the government in China does anything wrong?
Yeah.
No wrong at all.
So putting people in jail for practicing religion is okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Freedom of speech, stopping people from protesting, it's okay?
Yes.
Well, there you have it. Are they telling the truth, or are they like the previous man that he spoke to who covered his face for the interview? Are they afraid of being arrested if they actually go up against the Chinese government? He did mention during the course of the interview, by the way, that an older Chinese man walked up to these students as he was interviewing them, or a little bit after he interviewed them, talked to them for a little while, and then they disappeared and wouldn't talk to him anymore. So really? I'm sure there are some true believers over there in China who think the Communist Party is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But you do have to wonder how much of that is just fear talking. But it's another thing. It's another thing entirely. When you have somebody who lives in the United States of America, who is the mayor of a major city, New York City, who's a billionaire based on the capitalist system that is afforded to him in America. And of course, I'm talking about former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Did you hear what he had to say to Margaret Hoover on PBS's Firing Line just recently? Talking about China, talking about the Chinese dictator. It's incredible. You've got to listen to this. Cut four.
The Communist Party wants to stay in power in China, and they listen to the public. When the public says, I can't breathe the air, Xi Jinping is not a dictator. He has to satisfy his constituents, or he's not going to survive.
He's not a dictator?
No, he has a constituency to answer to.
He doesn't have a vote. He doesn't have a democracy. He doesn't.
That
he's
doesn't
not
mean
held accountable
he can
by voters.
If his advisors gave him.
Is the check on him just a revolution?
You're not going to have a revolution. Government survives without the will of the majority of its people. Okay? It's just he has to deliver services. The Chinese Communist Party looks at Russia, and they look for where the Communist Party is, and they don't find it anymore. And they don't want that to happen.
I mean, the idea that the Chinese government is responsive to sort of a democratic expression of fresh air, clean air.
Oh, come on, of course they are.
I mean, I'm looking at the people in Hong Kong who are protesting and wondering whether the Chinese government cares what they have to say.
The press the days when you have big pollution in Beijing, and they're doing something about it. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was Michael Bloomberg. Yeah, he's not a dictator. Oh, no, he's not a dictator. Oh, let's take a look at this. This was Beijing ramped up crackdowns on churches before National Day. This is via Bitter Winter, the religious magazine that covers the Chinese persecution of Christians. Here's what they just wrote. Ahead of the celebrations dedicated to the anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China, the country's capital intensified social stability maintenance measures, primarily targeting religious venues that are not approved by the state. Despite the government's attempts to make these house churches disappear, their congregations continue preserving their faith. Shortly after 8 a.m. on July 28th, for example, residents of a village in Beijing's Changping district felt despair and anxiety filling up the air when they saw half a dozen police officers storming a house church meeting venue. They brutally threw out on the street the church's belongings. They shut the place of worship down, claimed that believers' gatherings were disturbing people. The congregants were threatened never to step foot into the church again. And a resident told Bitter Winter that this church venue was established 6 years ago. All its members are law-abiding citizens, and neither they nor their gatherings had ever disturbed anyone in the village. This is the crackdown that's going on across China. We know this. And let's go back into Chinese history a little bit, shall we? Helen Raleigh, who is native Chinese, does some great writing out there. We've talked with her before, has a piece over at The Federalist. As communist China turns 70, its dark past haunts its future. Let me just give you a couple of quick looks at China. It's a long history, but let's talk about this. The first 30 years of the People's Republic, 1949 to 1979, were written in the tears and blood of millions of Chinese people. From land reform to the Great Leap Forward, Mao's socialist experiment destroyed property rights, brought the country's economy to ruin, and failed to achieve the economic equality he promised. The only thing Chinese people equally shared was misery. And she talks about the documentation of the suffering of her own family in her book. But listen to this. In China, official archives about this famine that took place are still largely sealed by the government and difficult to access. We can only estimate that the death toll during the Chinese famine ranged between 30 and 60 million people. To understand the scale of this atrocity, it is important to know that the estimated death toll for World War II was 60 million. So Mao inflicted human suffering in one country, possibly equivalent to that of the entirety of World War II. This was between the years 1958 and 1961, the Chinese famine. While millions of Chinese people were starving to death, China continued to provide food to other countries, including the murderous Khmer Rouge regime in Cambodia. Younger generations in China have no idea about this darkest chapter in Chinese history because history books published in China refer to the period from 58 to 61 as the 3 years of natural disasters or the 3 years of difficulties. Those who survived the famine had to submit every aspect of their lives to government control, what to wear, how much to eat, what to do for a living, where to live. But the regime wasn't satisfied until it had the full control of everyone's mind, too. And it goes on from there, and it goes on into today. And just a few years ago, well, actually within the last year especially, you see China cracking down on Christians right and left. You have to take down the Ten Commandments. We don't like that no other gods before me commandment. We got to take that out. You got to pledge your loyalty to the Chinese Communist Party. We don't like what's in your Bible. We don't like your worshiping. We don't like this. We don't like that. Change it. We're going to destroy your church. We're going to kick you out. We're going to arrest you. We're going to throw you in prison. You're going to be in camps. And yet you hear these poor young people sent over to the West, Australia, saying, no, there's nothing wrong with the Chinese government. Again, we don't know if they believe it, but I'm sure there are some true believers among them who truly think the Chinese Communist Party is awesome and you shouldn't be able to criticize it. Folks, this is exactly what separates Americans from most of the rest of the world, just like Robert Curry was pointing out. Let's hold on to the freedoms that God has given to us that have been so marvelously preserved in our Constitution and in our founding documents. Let's never lose it. Thanks for joining us on Janet Mefford Today. We're going to come back right after this, so don't go away. When a young woman in crisis walks into a preborn pregnancy center, she's on a journey, and the Ministry of Preborn is there to help her bring her journey to life.
Her name's Journey. She is the little peanut in my stomach. I'm glad I made the decision to keep her, even though it's life-changing, but it definitely changed my life for the best.
Preborn offers free ultrasounds to women in crisis at pregnancy centers nationwide. Because when a mom in crisis sees her baby on ultrasound, she's more likely to choose life for her baby. In fact, 8 out of 10 women will choose life if they see their babies on ultrasound. Would you join Preborn in the cause for life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your sponsorship goes to saving babies. To donate, call 855-402-BABY. 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Your love can save a life. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com, and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. I'll tell you, it is incredible to hear the stories of how the Lord is at work in the Middle East right now. We have been telling you, for example, about Syrian refugees coming to know the Lord as they are fleeing their homeland and taking refuge in the tent settlements of Lebanon. And that's because Heart for Lebanon is there, and they are on the ground providing food, survival essentials, and Christian education to children and their families. And they're hearing about Jesus for the first time and putting their trust in Him. It really is amazing. We have been asking if you can help the work continue, as it does take financial and prayer support to do what Heart for Lebanon does. Right now, you can help rescue a family of 6 with food and Christian education and survival essentials for just 98 cents a day. That's just $29 a month to rescue a family of 6. This is the number, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. And we thank you for your really, really strong support for Heart for Lebanon. Please continue to call 888-247-5499. We're going to check in now with James Ward, who is executive director of Heart for Lebanon, to find out more about what the Lord is doing in Lebanon. And James, it's wonderful to have you here. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much. And thanks to your listeners. You and your team and your listeners on the are just having a huge, huge impact on the work that's going on in Lebanon.
Oh, that's so awesome. We're so grateful to God for that. I have the best listeners in America, so I'm not at all surprised how well everybody's...
I believe that.
They are fantastic. Well, give us a little update, if you would, on what's been going on over there in Lebanon where you guys are on the ground. I love hearing these updates on what's been happening.
Well, I'll tell you, it has been an incredible season for us. God is doing things that truly, if you were to talk to our staff in Lebanon, we've got a staff of over 50 Middle Eastern followers of Jesus who are all Arabic speaking and doing God's work every day. And if you were to talk to them and listen to them, they would tell you that this is a historic moment in the way that God is moving in the Middle East.
Wow.
We are seeing families who have truly, Janet, and as you know, because you partnered with us for a while, families who have lost everything and have had to flee war and heartbreak and death and destruction and settled in Lebanon. And the fact that when they come across the border, the first people that they see, the people that are there to offer them a hand up, offer them food, care, education for their children, are followers of Jesus. And most of these folks come from a Muslim background. And that in and of itself is a worldview changing thing, to have followers of Christ reaching out and helping them. And because of that, because of the relationships that are being built, and of course, just the work that God's doing, we're seeing literally hundreds of men, women, and children come to Christ through this effort.
I love it. It makes me so happy whenever I hear about this, because this is exactly what we want. And this is the really, when you think about what Joseph said to his brothers, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. This seems like one of those moments, because you had ISIS, you have the ongoing crisis in Syria with the civil war there. These people have probably seen things none of us will ever see the likes of during our lifetimes. And to have that contrast of that civil war and the oppression of Islam, and then to come to Lebanon and to meet Christians, how do they normally make contact with you? Do you reach out to them? Do you offer a chance for their children to be educated first? Or how does that first contact happen when they enter the tent settlements?
Well, that's a great question. Generally speaking, as they enter the settlements, if it's a settlement that we work in, they'll hear about us. They'll hear about us from other families in those settlements. Kind of a typical story would be that of a young lady that I met back in February when I was there, a young lady by the name of Rahaf, who 13 years old, Janet, she saw her home destroyed, saw her brother killed in the bombing that ultimately destroyed her home. Her and her mom and her aunt and extended family left, came into Lebanon. When they entered into one of the settlements in Lebanon, they were told about Heart for Lebanon. And Rahaf's mother came to one of our staff members, Mr. Bashir, and said, "Hey, we've heard about you. Is there any way that you would consider helping my family and helping our daughter?" And Bashir and his team on the ground immediately do what they do and began to vet the family, make sure they truly had a need, that they are who they say they are, and get Rahaf plugged into the school. They were on the family care. And today, I'm excited to say Rahaf has come to Christ. Mm. She is, she's in school. She's studying. Her dream is to become a nurse and to go back to Syria, care for people, and tell them about Jesus. And that is, when your listeners partner, that's what they're a part of. That's what they're helping us to do in Lebanon. Every day, our staff is out there doing this awesome work.
That is so incredible. And I want to remind you of the phone number. It's 888-247-5499. 888-247-5499. We love Heart for Lebanon and what they're doing over in these tent settlements. And you can make a big difference rescuing a family of six with this kind of care, food and survival essentials and Christian education, just 98 cents a day, $29 a month. So it's 888-247-5499 or janetmefford.com. James Ward is with us, Executive Director of Heart for Lebanon. James, I'm curious, when you talk about the Christian education, and I think people need to understand this as well, you have an outreach to these kids, and what kind of Christian education do they get when they come in and they begin to go to school, because they don't have that opportunity just being in a tent settlement? There's no chance for them to go to school otherwise. How do you reach out to those kids? What do you teach them, and how do you instruct them during the day?
Great question. So we've got a couple different programs that we run that are really bent towards reaching this generation of men and women living in these camps. I'm sorry, boys and girls living in these camps. And so as we begin to build relationships with their parents, we have the opportunity to enroll them. We've got a non-formal education center. Technically, because they're refugees, the government in Lebanon won't allow us to operate a traditional school. So we operate what we call non-formal education centers, but they function much like a school. And the kids come every day to class. They've got teachers who are followers of Jesus that spend time with them, and they learn math, they learn the sciences, they learn Arabic, they learn English, and they are invested in and they're poured into. We have capacity for up to 300, 350 students in these programs. But then also, because there are literally hundreds of thousands of these young men and women in the tent settlements, we have programs, what we call Hope on Wheels, which is kind of a fun truck. It's a truck that we drive into the settlements. The side of the truck folds down, a stage rolls out, and we do children's programming and biblical education and leadership development programs with the students on this, out of this fun truck with our staff. And that's, we're able to reach literally thousands of young men and women going out to them and bringing the Christian values, Christian education to them. And then we've got several hundred that we minister to every day as they come to one of our education centers and experience a non-formal education.
Wow, a lot to do. There's a lot going on where you guys are in Lebanon. I'm curious, once they come to Christ, and I know for a lot of these children who come to know the Lord, then they end up having their parents come to the Lord. I've heard many, many stories from you guys about that sort of situation. The families are greatly affected when the children are taken care of. Once they come to Christ, do they worship together? What kind of follow-up is provided? Do you have, you know, Bible studies? What are you able to do for them there in the 10 settlements as far as follow-up?
Janet, would you believe that we have over 1,300 people every week in Bible studies? And these are just the adults. These are the men and women that we're serving. We have children that are involved in Sunday school classes at church. We've been able to, out of these programs and out of these Bible studies, we've been able to plant two churches where I'm excited to say over the course of the last several weeks, we've had nearly 700 people coming together and worshiping in these two churches, one in the Baca Valley, one down in the south of Lebanon. And so our focus, our real passion is to disciple these children, disciple these adults, because we believe that they will become a sending force, a mission force back to Syria and to some of the darkest places in the Middle East, and that God's given us this opportunity, this window of time, to invest in them spiritually, to engage with them, to disciple them, ultimately to help mobilize them back to be a mission force that can radically transform the Middle East for Christ.
That's incredible. That is incredible. 700 people worshiping, and I'm sure there will be more as well. And there's just so much to be done. But you're absolutely right, James, when you talk about the fact that as the Lord begins to change the hearts of these refugees, at some point, we hope for their sake, they'll be able to go back home and they'll be different people. They will be new creatures in Christ. They will be worshiping the true God and Savior of us all. And boy, you can't put a price on that. And if you'd like to help Heart for Lebanon, this is your chance. You can call 888-247-5499, 888-247-5499. And again, $29 a month will rescue a family of six with Christian education, food, and survival essentials, just 98 cents a day. So if you'd like to participate, again, the number 888-247-5499, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. James, we pray for you guys. We're so grateful for the outreach that Heart for Lebanon provides, and we're just honored to have you here. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you, and thank you for your listeners. The impact that's being made truly is incredible, and we are so grateful.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much, James. It was a delight to help. Thank you for being with us on Janet Mefford today. We'll see you next time. God bless.